And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
And we are looking at the current state of affairs of the local organic marketplace and food movement here in the United States and beyond on today's show. 40 years of growing organic food and organic awareness. How did we get here? What are the most important developments? And what does the future hold? Oh, how we've grown local agriculture today. That's the topic, all that and more today on An Organic Conversation.
Yeah, I tell you what, I've been a consultant traveling around the country with working with co-ops and retail stores for almost 17 years, and it has exploded. Every single store that I go in around the country is dealing with or trying to gain more organic food for their customers, and the customers are demanding more local food.
Yeah, exploded or... It's got sucked into what's right, right? I feel like when we look at relationships and the organic movement, you can only do what is not in line with ecology, environmental health, human health for that long. And now it more like falls back into place where, because the speed is mind-boggling, mm-hmm. right? There's anywhere you go. I just flew through Chicago and they now have a, what's the hanging gardens, vertical gardens called? The vertical gardens that are called vertical gardens. They now have the first airport vertical garden that is actually producing food. So amazing, just amazing.
Yeah, the first restaurant I worked at was an all-organic restaurant in New York. And at that time, it was really niche. But now, it's kind of the gold standard, or even just the standard. Even chefs, that's what's top of their mind. My restaurant is going to be local organic, but that's not what sets me apart. Of course, it'll be local organic. And we definitely see that in the coastal cities and Chicago, you know, really a lot of main cities. But even places like Indianapolis, they're really, that's becoming the norm. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Wonderful, wonderful.
And even our own Christian Ponger has worked at restaurants in New York and stuff that were farm to table. So, you know, it's really happening.
Our associate producer, shout out to Kristen. Kristen Ponger, associate producer.
But yes, let's shout out for her. And let's move on to the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Vermont's new energy plan. Vermont has announced a new energy plan that outlines how the state will receive 90% of its energy from renewable sources by 2050. The state, which already gets 23% of its power from renewable sources, relies heavily on biomass and hydropower. This bold plan was created in response to the massive amount of damage Hurricane Irene caused last year, with the goal of protecting the environment and economic security. The EU bans cage-produced eggs. As of January 2, 2012, all eggs sold in the EU must legally be produced using free-range or enriched methods, which means 50% more space than a conventional cage. The United Kingdom has complied, spending over £400 million on meeting the new standards, but many countries, including the EU's largest egg producers, Spain and Poland, have not, despite having 12 years to prepare. In the meantime, UK consumers have been urged to buy British to ensure that they are supporting the new, friendlier egg production methods. Small spiders, big brains. A research team at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute has discovered that spiders' brains can take up nearly 80% of the spider's entire body, with a central nervous system occasionally spilling over into the spider's legs. Some scientists have theorized that the arachnid's oversized brains are developed for web-spinning purposes, but researchers have not yet determined what the spiders sacrifice in favor of this remarkable attribute. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen Lloyd, for this weekly update of what's going on in the world of green and sustainability. Jen Lloyd, thanks so much. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about the local organic food movement. We have some fantastic guests lined up for you only here in An Organic Conversation as we're looking at the state of local and organic agriculture in the country. More on that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Put on my blue suede shoes. boarded the plane, touched down in the land of the Delta Blues, in the middle of the pouring rain. WC handy, won't you look down over me? Yeah, I got a first class ticket, but I'm as blue as a boy can be. Then I'm walking in Memphis, just walking with my feet 10 feet off a beam.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
The organic food movement started in the early 70s as a response to the oil crisis in the U.S. and irresponsible corporate behavior. Farmers turned their backs onto agrochemicals and started to farm again in harmony with the land, always keeping in balance with nature. People accepted apples with wormholes and were willing to pay more for them. The infrastructure, the marketplace, the educational efforts were in their infancy. And yet, over the course of the next four decades, the fledgling organic movement would grow rapidly by double digits every year to what it is today. Beyond the absence of pesticides and more nutrient-dense food, especially in the last 10 years, we've come to understand the additional values directly connected to organic and local agriculture, all the benefits from local economies to the environment, to local communities, and our society at large. Oh, how we've grown. A reflection of the state of affairs of the local organic food movement, today's topic on an organic conversation. With us now, calling from Santa Cruz, California, is the Executive Director of the Ecological Farming Association, Ken Dickerson. Ken, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hi, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So great to have you with us, because the Ecological Farming Association is one of the leading associations we have in the country, in the state of California, really leading the charge, where, you know, about half of the food in this country is produced here in California. Tell us about what EFA, the Ecological Farming Association, does. What's the goal? And why and when it was founded? How did this start?
Well, the organization is moving into its 32nd year.
Woohoo!
Yeah. we were founded in response to a need that farmers recognized that they needed to organize and educate themselves, that they weren't able to get access to the information they needed to implement a successful ecological and organic model of farming. And so they started with, I think, between 40 or 60 people originally at a scout camp in La Honda. That's where it all began.
And it's so true. I remember this story from one of the pioneers, Warren Weber, who still today farms, 40 or so acres, 40 plus acres in Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge, north of San Francisco. He started farming in 1972, and he said there was no university that had an extension office that could tell him anything about how to grow organic lettuces. And I think that was a phenomenon. There was just no information available. Mark, do you remember that time?
Well, what I remember about Warren Weber was I was trying to create the first all organic produce department, and they said, "Oh, we now have salad greens." And I was like, Why do you have salad greens? Because all the restaurants are selling them. And then Warren, Star Route Farms was the first farm to actually have them. And everybody would said, well, the consumers, run the market. And I said, well, actually not. People weren't asking for salad greens before they got there. And now it's the number one selling organic item in stores.
Yes. So out of that group, Ken, with the need for more education and really how to build an infrastructure around this movement, EFA was born. What were the first objectives of the organization, and what was the landscape like?
Well, I think the landscape was not particularly filled with resources. So the response was for the farmers and the people interested in these principles to gather themselves and to particularly tap into some of the elders. Everett Dietrich, mm-hmm. Rincon Vitovo was an original elder who shared that there were techniques to work with the issues that are involved in soil fertility and pest management inorganic systems, and you know, the gatherings were basically people getting together to share their experiences, their knowledge, and also to learn from what resources there were in people like Everett Dietrich. I think the landscape it has changed quite a bit, but the overall intent of the organization has not. EcoFarm is basically organized as an association to educate and advocate for a healthy, a safe, and a socially just food and farming system for everyone.
We're talking with Ken Dickerson, the executive director of the Ecological Farming Association, EFA, or in short, EcoFarm. From Santa Cruz today on An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And we're looking at the state of local and organic agriculture in the country 40 years on this show. Oh, how we've grown.
Yeah, Ken, I can remember the first time I went to EcoFarm, it felt like I was coming home and I'd never been there.
Yeah.
As I walked on the campus and I was like, oh, I know. Wow, this is amazing. And it's changed so much. Can you tell us about some of the current programs that you're offering?
Sure. One of the, our main program is always the Ecological Farming Conference, which is an annual conference held at Asilomar in Pacific Grove. And that's the event that gathers everyone together in the largest numbers focused on a conference activity. It runs for, depending on the year, 4 or 5 days. This year it's from February 1st through February 4th. And we'll have a program there that is launching an initiative that we have called the Ecological EcoFarm University. It's EcoFarm University. So Ecological Farming Association is organizing to examine the ways that we can work more directly with farmers. And we have 40 farmer fellows who are going to be attending the conference, participating in a values-driven direct marketing pre-conference. And the goals that we have for this program is actually to help the farmers increase their income, their farm revenue, and to examine the viability of marketing to food deserts in Santa Cruz and Monterey counties. This program will be really our first opportunity to bring a group together as EcoFarm University, and we're interested to explore how we, in concert with other groups such as FarmLink or the Community Alliance with Family Farmers, can work more directly to help nurture and support farmers in being successful in these models of business.
Yeah, which is an interesting point. Now, 40 years after the movement started in the early 70s, it is a completely different landscape, and yet the main challenges, access to land, economic viability of small-scale operations, it seems like it's going through ongoing cycles where mid-sized farms get a little bit larger or operations get bought up, smaller farms, new young farmers are coming back in, starting with just a handful of acres, kind of experiencing the same challenges all over again, trying to establish their new young farms. Can you confirm that? Is that what's really the most challenging aspects of the movement and becoming a farmer is economic viability and land access, even though it seems like we have seen more farmers markets than ever, more restaurants than ever, and yet the challenges seem to remain the same.
I think that's accurate. I think it's an odd thing to consider, but oftentimes I hear the notion that the United States actually needs land reform to make these types of operations viable and possible. There is a shift, I think, in the types of opportunities and the types of advocacy and resources that are available to new and beginning farmers setting out to sort of answer the call of even the USDA to populate American agriculture with hundreds of thousands of new farmers. We're actually interested to democratize the food and farming system, and the number that seems appropriate is 1 million. If we're going to have bioregional, local food shed kinds of agricultural economies that have resilience, it's going to take involvement of many people, putting people into a position where they can afford to operate.
Yeah, and the number I've heard actually has gone up all the way to 2 million already being kind of tossed around if we really wanted to establish local, countywide food systems that work with local schools, which we in part will cover in the second half of the hour today. But yeah, anywhere from a few hundred thousand to 2 million new farmers, that means land access, different water rights, seed, independence, access to loans without much infrastructure. So yes, all interesting as the market grows, or we're seeing an expansion of the marketplace, the challenges just get transferred into new areas so that it remains a juicy topic market.
And Ken, so where you're talking about creating the EcoFarm University, you're talking about you've got 40 farmers that are coming to work with young farmers, you want to help grow this number of farmers. Where does the USDA or where does some of the farming organizations in our country fall into this? Where are they? Are you finding support now to bring more young farmers onto the land? What are you seeing out there?
Well, I think that's an excellent point, Mark. It is a changed landscape in that regard. It was Secretary Vilsack from the USDA who called upon this movement and put a little fire behind it across the country. The 40 farmer fellows that will be at EcoFarm this year are actually coming on a program that's funded by the USDA. So I think that there is a new landscape. There's a lot. There's recognition of the importance of these kinds of changes, and there are resources that are becoming available. One of the markers that we have is that the average age of farmers over the last decade has actually gotten younger, which is a
yay. Yeah, for the first
exciting.
Time ever.
Yeah, Ken, you're talking about a nationwide initiative and actually a nationwide response. I'm curious if you can comment on what you've seen across the nation as far as the growth of the local food movement.
Well, I think what's kind of amazing is that it's everywhere, and the awareness is everywhere, and it's very encouraging because the awareness is also being included in the curriculum of schools, mm-hmm. from elementary schools through high schools, and certainly colleges across the country. The idea of ecological sustainability has gotten traction, and I think it's very encouraging. It's a point where we're seeing that the awareness, ecological literacy, is something that is becoming more mainstream. From an excellent radio show like yours to features on NPR.
What was that?
Yeah, that's something that I'm noticing for sure with the work that I do at Bowman College. We actually have a whole farm-to-table section in the culinary arts training program there, which is focusing on local food for sure, but not just in the food world, not just at culinary schools and nutrition schools. We're talking about mainstream schools, elementary schools, middle schools, high schools. They're having initiatives to teach students about local food too. Yes.
Yes, I think it's tremendous. It's in a time with cuts to education, one of the things that EcoFarm has available is people can sign up for our EcoFarm jobs and opportunities list, and continually we get postings from all across the country for garden-based jobs in all different capacities and farm-based jobs, but particularly educational positions, garden-based education programs. And that's very dear to my heart because before I became the Ecological Farming Association's executive director, I spent 11 years teaching ecological agriculture in a vocational program in Santa Cruz County high schools.
Yes, so we're talking with Ken Dickerson, the executive director of the Ecological Farming Association, or EFA, or EcoFarm, and that website is eco-farm.org. Ken, stay with us today for a little bit longer, if you can. We want to talk about that upcoming conference, which I'm sure you're eager to get back to planning, because it's just a couple of weeks away. But we're taking a super quick break, and then we want to talk a little bit more about the upcoming conference in more detail today. Here on An Organic Conversation, I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palamara.
We're looking at the state of local agriculture, 40 years, or how we've grown. More on that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
He was born in the summer of his 27th year, coming home. Place he'd never been before. He left yesterday behind him. You might say he was born again. You might say he found the key for every door.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Piscopo, executive chef at the new signature restaurant, The W San Francisco, Trace. It's our farm-to-urban table concept, which means all of our ingredients are locally sourced, sustainable, and traceable back to their natural origins, ensuring a dedication to socially responsible cuisine. We look forward to seeing you soon at Trace. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com. That's trace-sf.com. Or call 415-817-7836.
Bowman College has been offering professional training in nutrition and the culinary arts since 1989. Natural chefs will learn to master a healthful approach to classic culinary techniques, while nutrition consultants become experts in client consultation and the promotion of individualized plans for optimal health. Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. To find out more, visit bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMANcollege.org.
And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palamar.
And we're looking at the state of the local organic food movement. Today's topic on An Organic Conversation, we have Ken Dickerson with us, the executive director of the Ecological Farming Association, or EcoFarm, eco-farm.org, calling in from Santa Cruz. But before we continue that conversation and hear more about the upcoming conference where really the world of agriculture gathers at Asilomar, at a conference place in Monterey County, California, here is the weekly update from the produce market. Mark Mulcahy, what's in season? Take it away.
Yeah, what's in season? And we've got Earl Herrick of Earl's Organic on the phone, the voice of the market, ready to tell us about what's going on. Earl, what's happening there at the market? What are you excited about?
I'll tell you, I'm very happy in this new year because right now the domestic avocado starts.
Oh,
we can get excited about the California avocado again because the Fuerte is here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you and I generally talk about the Haas, but, you know, the Fuerte avocado is the one that built the avocado market back in the early days in the 20s and the 30s.
Really?
Yeah. Now the Fuerte is the large, pear-shaped, long neck, thin skin, smooth skin avocado that kind of darkens slightly when it ripens. Now, when you pick this, you want to make sure as it ripens, you want to avoid black uneven spots because, you know, that's overripe. So this particular avocado has this great creamy kind of light flavor with a medium to large seed, which it makes a great complement in salads. It's kind of a partner in a salad rather than this kind of super strong component that the Haas can become.
Hey Earl, you're talking about a Fuerte, and I know that for older guys like you and I, that's a very common avocado. But, you know, for our listeners, that may not be as common of sight that they would see in stores. Is it kind of a rarer avocado for people to see?
Well, you know, it was big in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and in the early 70s, that's when the Haas came out. So the Fuerte, all the acreage went to the Haas. So I'm only dealing with a handful of growers that is, you're going to see that avocado between probably December, January, and a little bit into February, but the production is very small, so there's not a lot of guys that are going to have it.
And is the quality good right now, Earl? What's this year like with that kind of avocado?
For me, right now, the Fuerte is the one you want to eat. I talk to many people that say this is their favorite avocado, but we've become unfamiliar with it. So make sure that, well, first of all, it can be difficult because it's got a thin skin, and we're so used to the dark Haas. So the Fuerte doesn't have to get real dark. It just has to get kind of lightly darker.
Yeah.
Rather than black.
Great information. And actually, it for most of you, would want to recognize that it's going to stay green. You know, it's going to get a little bit darker green, but it's not going to turn black. And fantastic, Earl. We'll look for some Fuertes out there.
Yes, please.
Thanks for calling in. Yes, I agree. And we'll talk to you next week, all right?
Hey, always good to hear from you guys.
Thank you very
much.
Thanks, Earl. Thank you.
And just for our listeners out there, just to let you know that in the 50s, there were 25 different avocados that you could find at your stores. And now you see about one, a Haas, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time. And they all have different flavors. And so if you're going to choose one, as Earl said, it's thin skin, peels easy. It stays green, but it will just get a little bit darker. And you just want to cup it in your hand, and the fruit will yield to gentle pressure when ripe. So go out and find a Fuerte, and then listen, you know, through the rest of the show, and Sita's got some great ideas about how to use them.
And Mark, are they from Fuerteventura? Where does the name come from?
Where does Fuerte come from?
Yes.
You know what, Helga? It's a great question, and I have to admit, for the first time, I don't know.
Yes.
Look it up over break. Pop it in during Holistic Bite, because now
will.
I'm curious, too.
Yeah.
And that was this week's What's in Season. Thank you, Mark, for
update. You're welcome.
The topic of today's show here on An Organic Conversation is Oh, How We've Grown, a reflection on the local organic food movement. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And joining us still from Santa Cruz, California is no less but Ken Dickerson, the executive director of the Ecological Farming Association.
Now, Ken, you know, EcoFarm has been really a guiding light for this industry for a long time. And with organic farming and local farming exploding all over the country, like I noticed the PASA, the Pennsylvania Sustainable Agriculture Association, they are in their 12th year of a conference. And so has the infrastructure kept up with, I mean, the laws and, you know, all of that stuff? Has that been able to keep up with this growth?
Well, I think that you know, the beauty of people organizing themselves like this, Mark, is that it's direct action, and it's people being involved in shaping how things are going to play out. And I think when people get together and they cooperatively and collectively organize, they have a role to play. And I think we've been, you know, to varying degrees successful over time in shaping the policies and shaping the landscape for having this kind of agriculture be a mainstay and the fastest growing segment of the food system for about 15 years running. So I think it's a very positive sign, and is actually one of the main focuses of our conference this year, our 32nd annual conference. has groups gathering to talk about the Farm Bill, to talk about the ballot initiative to require labeling for genetically modified ingredients in food. The theme for this year's conference is Raising Eco-Farmers' Voices, and it's to that end, because if we don't do it, who will? And, you know, this is a democracy, and this is an opportunity through through a concern around the qualities and the values that we'd like to have in our food system to be expressed. And it takes people leaning in and working together to make that happen.
So wonderful, because it seems to be the theme of this year of 2012, finding your voice, trusting it, not demanding what you want, but creating what you want. And no longer going by convention. And we do have an organic law since 2002. And with that, the federal interest has grown over the last years, of course, with Michelle Obama 3 years ago planting an organic garden, a vegetable garden, specifically an organic garden, not just a vegetable garden at the White House lawn. So it seems like the movement has so matured that the from a grassroots start or initiative now all the way to the White House, it's really spanning all sectors, all areas of society, of education, of law, and hence the growth of the conference that is coming up. EcoFarm, 32 years, and now this year expecting, what, 1,400, 1,600 people gathering in Monterey from February 1st to the 4th. Is that number about right?
That's about right. We'd probably see somewhere around 1,400 people get together. About 50% of them will be farmers, and the rest will be from all walks of all sectors of the industry and walks of life. And we get a tremendous number of people coming because they're concerned citizens, or they're interested in learning more about this, and they want to have the chance to enjoy an eco farm, which is a really good time. There's lots of learning. There's lots of fun. It's the oldest eco ag gathering in the West, and you have a chance to share experiences with farmers, ranchers,
and the number
across the spectrum.
The number is such a beautiful reflection of where this movement, or what's the grounding? What's the groundedness of the movement and its land and the farmer as the direct connection to the land, and then building from there. So 50%, about 700, 750 people will gather that are farmers or food producers, and then 700 or 750 will come who are really from educators to policymakers to store owners to company managers. The whole infrastructure will gather there from any angle possible, university representatives. What will people encounter if they come? And do you still have space available for people for like day use, for a pass if somebody was here or wanted to fly in for a day? Where are we at?
Things are filling up, but there's still room. And we have been able to open up a few more rooms. So there are some limited rooming packages available. But certainly anyone who is interested to come for the day use would be welcome, and our meals will be available. Our organic meals will be available. The food that we use there will actually be from the association, the farmers and the companies that participate in EcoFarm and sponsor EcoFarm, to whom we are greatly thankful. They have helped us to revolutionize the food service at the facility. And in fact, that is another thing that really marks this kind of change that you're talking about, is that large institutions that manage resorts, that manage schools or prisons even, they're interested to access local and organic produce as part of their offerings as well.
Yeah,
and it's kind of the TED conference meets pioneers, and yet it's as much that as it is really a think tank, right? You have tons of workshops coming up.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. As an educator and as a member of the press, but can you tell us about some of the workshops that would appeal to anybody who's just passionate about this movement but may not necessarily have their hands in the soil?
Sure. Well, I'd encourage them to go to our eco-farm.org website where everything is laid out, but I could tell you a little bit about the variety of sessions. First, I've been thinking about this think tank idea, and one of the things that I really think is represented at EcoFarm is it's a do tank. It's where people get together and figure out ways to implement their ideals. We have sessions that are technical how-to type of sessions for ranchers and farmers. We have solutions for how to grow your business, a whole track for special opportunities for beginning farmers and ranchers, sessions that will be on important policy initiatives. I mentioned before the 2012 Farm Bill and also the ballot initiatives that are being launched across the country to require labeling of GMO ingredients. And it's a variety of sessions, and it's predominantly focused on our region, the Western region, but we have attendance from across the country, even with the variety of conferences that are all around the country advocating in their regions. And we also have an international component. This year there will be a delegation from Urgency International, which is a CSA advocacy group, a community-supported agriculture group, and they're going to participate this year, and then they're organizing their international congress at EcoFarm in 2013. And it's not only the technical know-how. The days are capped off with special events. We have a seed swap where farmers and gardeners share their varieties of their home-saved seeds. We have films, wine tasting, beer and cheese tasting, discussion groups for farmers this year is a new feature, mixers, and this year will be our renowned talent show.
Really?
And that's something not to be missed. I think Helga was actually...
Oh, yeah, no, okay, we are out of time now.
Oh, yeah, that was a swimsuit competition.
Thank
or
you,
something,
Ken. yes, all that and more. And it brings us back to Mark saying it does feel like home. I don't know how many years I've been going. And the moment you get there, even for the very first time, I remember the energy of 1,600 people creating a new paradigm around how we grow food and produce food and eat food and talk about food is just amazing. If you have any relationship to that world, you will find these extremely inspiring and perhaps life-changing days. EcoFarm coming up February 1st to the 4th. More information on that website of the Ecological Farming Association, which is eco-farm.org, eco-farm.org. Ken Dickerson, Executive Director. Ken, good luck with the remaining couple of weeks.
Thank you.
3 weeks to go. I know you have your hands full, and it will be phenomenal, and we'll see you there. Thanks for being on the show today.
Look forward to it. Thanks so much, Ken.
Thanks, Ken.
Thanks.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
Yes, you are, and I'm Mark McCahey.
yes, you are. And I'm Sita Ronnie Palomar.
And we're looking at the state of agriculture, and we have an exciting guest coming up, Adrian Bauman, the executive director of Marin Organic, a small but mighty nonprofit organization just north of the Golden Gate Bridge, award-winning programs that really change the entire culture in the county. More on that when we come back. We'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for more.
Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites, available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
There is nothing more restorative than garden fresh food cooked with skill and served with love. Bowman College has been promoting well-being for more than 20 years by teaching people to cook and eat for health. Launch your career as a nutrition consultant or natural chef and learn to nourish yourself and your loved ones. I'm Ed Bowman, founder and president of Bowman College, Holistic Nutrition and Culinary Arts. Check us out at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
Trace, the new signature restaurant at the W San Francisco, is committed to creating an enriching and thoughtful culinary experience. By fusing the vibrant local personality of the Bay Area with a dedication to socially responsible food, Trace ensures all the ingredients are traceable back to their natural origins, locally sourced and sustainable. For reservations, visit trace-sf.com, T-R-A-C-E-S-F.com, or call 415-817-7836.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
Today's show is about the change and the growth of the organic food movement. Oh, how we've grown. 40 years of organic agriculture in this country and beyond. We heard from Ken Dickerson, the executive director of the Ecological Farming Association, and the upcoming EcoFarm conference, attracting some 1,600 policymakers, farmers, educators to Monterey on February 1st to the 4th. And our next guest is Adrian Bauman, the executive director of Marin Organic, a small but mighty nonprofit that changed the entire culture around local agriculture in Marin, Marin County, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. But before we get into that interview, he is the weekly wonderful Sita Rani Palomar, Chef Sita with the Holistic Bite.
Weekly and wonderful. I like that. Wonderfully weekly. So today we're talking about avocados. And I love avocados because they're a great source of protein and potassium, which is a really great thing to consider right now for those of you who are kicking your physical activity up post-holiday, that you can get protein and potassium, which is fantastic for reducing muscle tightness and crampingness. Avocados are also rich in monounsaturated fats, which means that they have been shown to lower LDL cholesterol and raise your HDL cholesterol, overall lowering your risk of heart disease. Another great thing about avocados is that they can increase your body's ability to absorb carotenoids like beta-carotene and lycopene. And I talk a lot about how phytonutrients like carotenoids have amazing health properties as far as blood sugar balance and blood pressure balance, and also reducing your risks of cancer. So carotenoids are found in carrots and tomatoes, to name a few. And a great way to put all of this together would be to make some guacamole and put tomatoes in it, so you get that lycopene, and serve it with, of course, tortilla chips. Yes, I'm a purist, but also some carrot sticks. And then your body will better make use of the nutrients in the carrots and tomatoes because of the avocado. And since we are approaching Super Bowl time, which, by the way, for those of you trivia buffs, is the day when we consume and purchase the most avocados in the entire year, why not host a little guacamole mash-off? I've participated in one of these before, and it's super fun. I actually got to judge it, which was great because I got to eat all of the guacamole. But everybody's got their own version. You know, one of my favorites is simply mashed avocado with some lime juice, chopped cilantro, and corn. But at the guacamole mashup that I judge, people were doing things like caramelized onion guacamole, or they were seasoning it with orange juice and orange zest. And I was thinking about Fuerte, is that how I say it, Mark?
Fuerte
avocados.
Which is strong, means strong in Spanish.
Oh, you did look it up for us. Thank you, Mark. Strong. These strong Fuerte avocados are actually, I think that they lay a better profile for other flavors than the Haas avocados do. So if you do host or participate in a guacamole mashup for Super Bowl Sunday, consider using Fuerte so that the other flavors of the ingredients you put in your guacamole will really shine through, and that just might make you win your competition.
And where do you hear about a mash-off?
I have to tell you this. My sister-in-law runs, she runs a co-working space. It's called Next Space, and they have all these great fun events in the evening. It's, you know, independent business owners who like to have fun networking at the end of the evenings. And they had this big guacamole mash-off party, and they invited me as a chef to be the judge. And I thought, God, my job is so fun.
Yeah, a mash-off.
Right? Better than a chili cook-off, guacamole mash-off. So anyway, consider having a little Fuerte avocado this time around, and that's your holistic bite.
Absolutely.
And all that and more on our Facebook page, anorganicconversation.com, facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
He'll get it right one of these days.
All the wonderful recipes from Chef Sita. Thank you, Chef Sita, with your holistic bite every week. We are looking at the growth of the organic movement, 40 years in the making, 40 years of growing organic food and organic awareness. And next with us is Adrian Baumann, the executive director of Marin Organic, an award-winning nonprofit association of organic growers just north of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, California, really leading the way as an example of how to connect. We talked about relationships, Mark, as the framework of this, as this movement is so growing so rapidly, the framework sometimes has a little bit hard time of catching up. For example, if you wanted to volunteer or work at an organic farm, you might violate labor laws because the labor law doesn't recognize that somebody would work willingly for free in a field. So there's no technically, if you produce economic value to the farmer, you would fall under labor law, perhaps in your state. So I'm sure you're experiencing similar things in the retail business as we are all learning how to work and deal with organic foods.
Absolutely.
In every part of the society.
And as the new generation comes and embraces it, I'm recognizing that there are some things about the organic law that haven't been taught and that they're learning those things. And also, as more farmers are bringing food, consumers want more local food and organic food from their stores, retailers and farmers are learning to work together because it's not the same thing as a farmer's market experience, right?
Yes, and the organization that really figured this out, all the relationships, all the levels, is Marin Organic, marinorganic.org. Adrian Baumann, the executive director, now with us. Adrian, are you on the phone with us?
I am. Hello.
Thank you for making the time.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.
We wanted to celebrate you as you just won yet another award for innovation of programs. Tell us how Marin Organic came together and what is the objective of the organization?
Well, first of all, what a great title. Oh, my, how we've grown. That's very perfect. We are celebrating a decade now of organic local food in Marin County.
So. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. We were founded in 2001, and we were founded by, you know, a pioneering group of farmers, people with well-known names like Warren Weber from Starroot Farms and Janet Brown of All Star Organics, Sue Connolly of Cowgirl Creamery, the Strauss family, Albert Strauss, so people that all of us have heard of, and they came together actually in the early 90s around kitchen tables and in their barns and talked about the need for an advocate and a hub for all of these organic farms and ranches in the county. And in 2001, Marin Organic was founded, and in conjunction with that, they also worked with the local agricultural commissioner to create the nation's first county-based organic certification program. So the two came to fruition hand in hand. And, you know, it started with just a handful of producers. Today we have 40 farmers, ranchers, and agricultural producer members at Marin Organic.
And so that early recognition that it has to be on some kind of governmental level as well, offering local certification through the Ag Commissioner, which kind of made it a one-stop shop, right? You would get your Ag permit and your organic certificate from the same person, pulled in the government in an unprecedented way. The movement always has had a certain, how would we call it, Mark, fair distance to anything governmental oversight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marin Organic turned that around and said, no, we want to collaborate. What are some other areas where Marin Organic has been successful in kind of breaking the convention and the mold and doing it differently? For example, you have a very successful school lunch program.
Yes, Absolutely. We work with over half the public and private schools in Marin County today. And we distribute local organic product from our farmer members, as well as gleaned product that we go out and harvest from the fields with volunteers. And that's one of our, definitely our most groundbreaking program. And Helga, you had a big part in that, in case none of your listeners don't know. Helga was executive director before myself. I had very big shoes to fill when I took this job. So
yes, it's 12.
Yeah. So very exciting. We have gleaned through this program over 160,000 pounds since the inception.
This is such a cool initiative. I want to pop in here because I did get an opportunity to go and volunteer on one of these gleaning days. Marin Organic invites families and children from schools to come on a Sunday afternoon and walk through the fields and harvest collard greens and chard and kale or whatever there happens to be at that farm, and packages it up and sends it to the schools to work or to incorporate into the lunches that week. That's amazing. I don't know if anybody else in the country is doing that, but wow, what an amazing initiative.
Yeah, it's an amazing initiative and a really resourceful way of looking at production. There was just a big show on the Food Network on Sunday night called The Big Waste, where four chefs had to create a meal out of the wasted food from farms and from behind the back door of restaurants. And unfortunately, it was really easy for them to do so because so much of food does go to waste in this country. They say the national average is 20%. On this show, one of the farmers said the waste from his farm alone was 50 to 60%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes, and it brings up a beautiful notion of waste in nature. As we so often say on the show, waste is a word that was created by humans. There's nothing wasted in nature. Everything has a new purpose. And it does bring up, when I hear the argument that this is a finite planet, I would actually now argue that it is not. It is just up to us to use the resources infinitely. I know that there are water plants that within half a day or so produce as much healthy water as they take in and then cultivate it and circulate it and bring it back. So there's, not that we are talking about the total capacity of people living on this planet, that should be infinite. But when I hear finite planet, we haven't even started to look at what we are wasting and throwing away and how it could be cultivated again.
And it really is taking off, because in 1997, there were two known farm-to-school programs that actually used local farms for school meals. Mm-hmm. And in 2009, there were 2,095 farm-to-school programs in the United
wow.
States.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is incredible. Amazing. In 5 years.
Wow.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's very different. What 10 years ago when we were founded, no one was really talking about local organic. And now you can't walk into a restaurant without them touting that on their menu or the chef talking about it. Organizations that throw their fundraising parties, local farmers are the highlight of the menu. And that's been one of Marin Organic's successes. When we started, we were the only ones doing that. And now everybody is. And wow, what a success story.
How have you been able to find collaborations between partners that traditionally had never worked together? What's the secret with Marin Organic? Why so successful?
Wow, I think human relationships. Being willing to work with anyone, whether you're talking about our supporting business program where we work one-on-one with restaurants, helping them source local organic products, or working with the schools, getting in one ingredient at a time. It's not always easy. They're on a really tight budget. So, we might just start with yogurt from Strauss, or we might just start with lettuce from Star Root. And just really trying to be there. We don't operate as a big industrial distributor of food. We pick up the phone every time somebody calls. We are always there, and we're always willing to find a solution and make that partnership happen.
How has the community responded over the last 10 years? What has changed on a cultural level in Marin County around the awareness of food?
Wow. I think in Marin County, perhaps the East Coast more than anywhere in the world, local and organic is the hottest trend to hit the food market, whether you're retail, restaurant, and even school lunch. Again, no one was really talking about this 10, 15 years ago, and now it's everywhere. So knowing your farmer, going to the farmer's market, the increase in farmer's markets across the nation is incredible. And it's an experience. People want to go there. They want to see the people they're buying the food from. They want to talk about how it's grown. They want to ask for recipes that maybe the farmer might suggest. So a lot has changed. I mean, I really look at what Marin Organic has done and other organizations as well, is we've kind of turned these farmers into, you know, rock stars. They're today's celebrities, mm-hmm. and people want to know about them.
Yeah, whether they want to be or not.
Yeah, so some true. Of them don't like the limelight, but
that's why they became farmers.
Well, and more so than just at the farmers market, but at grocery stores. You go to stores around here, and actually there are photographs of all of the farmers who are part of Marin Organic. I remember when I first moved here to California, and I saw that, I was so excited that there was such a, like you were saying, Adrian, the human connection, right? That's what gets people on board with this. And I think that it's, if people were to open their eyes to how collaborative this was, that they could see how they could replicate it in other parts in this country. You guys are such an inspiration.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you. Well, our members, our producers and ranchers and, you know, cheesemakers and olive oil, they're all our inspiration every day. It's a big part of the reason why we come to work. And it's an honor, you know, to work on their behalf and to help educate the public about why local and organic food is important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Adrian, have you had other organizations reach out to you to try to create organic counties or to model your school program?
Yeah, organizations and even countries. You know, as Helga knows, when he was here, the Prince of Wales and Duchess of Cornwall came in 2005. And toured the local farmers market in Point Reyes and went to visit Starroot Farms. So the attention, I think, and the name of Marin Organic has spread actually internationally, not just nationally. There are some other great organizations doing similar work to what we do. But certainly the name is out there, and anytime we can help, you know, host international delegations. We had Denmark come through last year. We had people from Japan coming through, Italy. Anytime we can do that, just help spread the knowledge and the inspiration, we're certainly ready to do so.
And that is Adrian Baumann, the executive director of a small but mighty nonprofit north of the Golden Gate Bridge in Marin County called Marin Organic, marinorganic.org. And yes, I've been the executive director there before Adrian for 7 years. Adrian, you're doing a wonderful, wonderful job. So we will look at the next 10 years with Marin Organic, and we'll for sure have you back before that.
We'll see you at Eco Farm.
We'll see you
great.
At Eco Farm,
look
yes.
forward to it, yeah.
Again, marinorganic.org to learn all about the award-winning programs and how to support the organization and become a member and friend of Marin Organic. Thanks for joining us today, Adrian.
Oh, thank you. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Our pleasure.
Thanks so much, Adrian.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And that was a little sweet update on the last 40 years of growing organic food and growing organic awareness. Oh, how we've grown local agriculture today.
Do we have time for the mailbag?
No, we do not. The voices of the listener parked until next week. But please do send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. share@anorganicconversation.com. We'd love to hear from you.
How about your moment?
Sure.
Okay.
My organic moment. Yes. We talk about the gift of giving all the times here on the show. And I remember driving over the Golden Gate Bridge a few years ago and was waved through the toll booth because the car in front of me had already paid for me. I didn't understand what was happening and chased the car for a couple of miles to find out how I possibly could deserve this. When we stopped at a light, finally, I looked over and gestured, "Why?" The person in the car gestured back, "Just because I can." The gift of giving. When a moment of giving is so joyful that, as the giver, you're also gifting something right back to yourself. The more love you give, the more love you are experiencing. And this love you can create yourself at any moment.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a very, very proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, no less but Robert Costa. Production assistant, Lauren Mulcahy.
If you miss parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
We are your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. I come in from the wilderness, a creature void of form.
Come in, she said, I'll give you shelter from the storm. If I pass this way again.